CP3 dribble drive, lobs to Ayton for the jam time. A beautiful alley-oop from Chris Paul to DeAndre Ayton. Booker quickly into the forecourt at the free throw line. Step back jumper, drilled it.
That's the Devin Booker we know.
John Bloom, Tim Kempton, a couple of the highlights from last night's win for the Suns over the Houston Rockets. They get back into the win column, 109-103, and a lot of people had questions. We talked about specific questions that we were pondering going into that game for the Suns. The first question was DeAndre Ayton. Could he keep it up? Could he string together another strong performance? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
He was even better last night than he was Monday in Memphis. And like you said earlier, had a lot of fingerprints on that win, especially late in the fourth quarter, because they didn't close well. We'll get into that in a little bit. The other question was, what's going on with Devin Booker? He was just not good in Memphis on Monday. 5 of 21, scored 12 points. He didn't have, you know, a 40-point game, but much more efficient. 10 of 18 from the floor, 24 points. He did turn the ball over six times, but had 5 rebounds and 2 assists. Monty Williams, who joined us earlier in the week, he kind of reiterated what he told us last night after the game, that there was not very much concern about number one.
And Devin's, like I told you guys, I'm not worried about his shooting or his shot. He's just too good of a shooter. He's one of the best shooters I've ever seen in my life. Watch him every day. Knock down all kinds of shots in mid-range, threes, at the rim, both hands. And so that's something that I don't take for granted, but he's just gifted in that area.
And I think as the season goes on, again, things that we've talked about, Bick, the comfort level will continue to grow. The chemistry will continue to be put together for this team the more they play together. Again, the last time we saw them in an NBA basketball game, they hadn't been able to practice together for a week, mm-hmm. So they showed up and played, still almost won the game. It was a disappointing loss. This is going to get better, and Devin Booker's performance last night was reassuring. Even though, I agree with Monty Williams, I don't think there was that much concern.
Yeah, no, not with Devin Booker. The only thing that went through my mind, if we're going to be fully honest about everything and all,
yeah,
was when he got rejected by the rim. I just started to wonder, okay, is his off-court conditioning still the same as it's always been, being in a relationship and all? You know what I mean? I'm not one to talk about Kardashian curses because it's nonsense. But serious relationships change you.
Look, NBA players are on lockdown. He can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I know. Right. I mean, but I'm sure Devin Booker's. Yeah, okay, listen, I know. But that was the only thing I wondered about, whether physically if he is the same as he's always been. But again, he's got so much goodwill in my bank, if you will, as a sports fan, just from always improving and always answering that proverbial bell, that I wasn't tripping about him at all either.
Yeah. The turnover thing is interesting, considering this is a year where you figure he's handling the ball less than in past years because of Chris Paul, that his turnovers have been up.
Yeah, I that's something that's bothered me. One of the few things that does bother me about his game is he has been turnover prone, and that has continued. And I think Jarrett brings up a good point. The ball handling duties are less, although there's a lot of staggered minutes. You know, Devin Booker and Chris Paul start each half together. Then there's a lot of staggering of those two, so they're not on the court constantly together. So to say Devin Booker doesn't have ball handling duties, that's not accurate either. But
right. That's
something that needs to get better. Well, I think that's something that needs to get better as a team. We've seen them go through a 48-minute game turning the ball over twice. Last night, again, 17 turnovers led to 23 points. Made things a lot harder than it had to be.
I think there's an easy solution to this. I think a lot of the confusion is coming in endgame situations where Chris Paul and Devin Booker are on the floor together, and Devin Booker in some ISO kind of situations where he's used to in the past shaking his guy or getting off the shot regardless, now has options, and he's now facilitating a little bit, and his guys are not always making these open looks. So I think in the short term, going out, I would just tell Devin Booker, this is your time to score. Unless there's a guy really wide open, and unless you got guys blitzing you like crazy, just create by yourself. And then use that as a jumping off point and see what happens. I think last night, to me, the big thing about the DeAndre Ayton thing was not just the domination that he showed, which was his best stretch of 4 to 5 minutes I've ever seen from him in his basketball career. And I think that's undebatable. Mm-hmm. And that's a source of great optimism, should be, for everybody. But what's even better about it is the Phoenix Suns in that game once again got out to a couple of comfortable leads and let the team come back. And then here we go. Here comes the torrent of missed three-point shots again. And then the Suns would make a couple, keep them at bay. When DeAndre Ayton popped at the end of that game, he took over that game and he won that game for the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is what's I hope that is speaking to him.
Well, that popped out to me too, watching the game and then looking at the stats afterwards. The Suns were 8 of 34 from three-point range, 23.5%. That continues to be a concern because normally speaking, when they don't hit that three-point shot, and we've seen it recently, they have trouble winning games. That was one of Monty Williams' takeaways from all of it was, the Suns didn't shoot it great, but they still won.
No doubt. I mean, we'll be able to show that segment I just talked about where we were able to just get stop after stop. And then just showing the team, DA's ability to cover up a lot of on-ball mistakes in the paint. Because you're going to have nights like that with travel and so many inconsistencies in our day. It may throw our rhythm off. All teams are dealing with it. If you look around the league, you'll have games where teams score 140, like I just saw somebody scored, or you'll have teams scoring in the low hundreds, which is weird for this NBA. But we have to be able to have those moments in the game where we can get stop after stop after stop and get out and play in transition. And we did that tonight. We just couldn't score a bunch in the second half.
I'll tell you one of the things, and there's a lot to like about Chris Paul being on your team. He brings so much to it. But the never satisfied attitude, I mean, that was a team that lost two games in a row. They had a very uneven road trip. Then they get a week's worth of postponements. They get back on the court, and they let one slip through their fingers at Memphis. So a win last night had to feel great. But in the moments right after the game, Chris Paul puts on the headset and talks to Kevin Ray on Fox Sports Arizona and just kind of laid it out there, that never satisfied attitude.
You know, we're supposed to win. I still don't love the way we finish games. It just don't feel good.
He elaborated on that about, empty possessions in the last couple minutes of the game.
We just have a lot of empty possessions. You know what I mean? That's understood. We got somewhat of a young team that's, not necessarily used to winning games, and you win games in this league down the stretch. So that's on me. Figure it out because supposed to win this game, and it's not even supposed to be that close.
I totally agree with it. I mean, it feels good to get the win, but I love that attitude. You look at the way that transpired, they're up 9 with 4 minutes to go. They're up 7 with 2.5. It gets down to 2 points with a minute 38 to go, and they had to fight and claw for a game that they were dominating. It looked like they were going to coast to a 30-point win. That is what concerns me. So I'm glad that Chris Paul addressed it last night.
Yeah, well, look, they had to get back in the winning ways, however the method yesterday. But I do agree with that. That has to be the standards have to be higher, and they have to be better in those end game situations. Because if you're going to be a team that's worth a damn, you're going to have to win games late, especially against good teams. And you can't be a good team and fail in those situations more often than not. So again, the pushing that's going on with this basketball team, I think, is a big part of the story of what's happening.
A couple of other things that stood out to me. They won a game last night where Mikal Bridges scored about half of what he's averaging.
Mm-hmm.
He had only 8 points, 3 of 7, did have 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. I don't know what to make of the starting lineup switch yet. We're 2 games in, still a very small sample, but Cam Johnson, kind of a quiet game, 8 points, 2 of 7. Jay Crowder, 2 of 10 from 3-point range. I'm not sure what the benefit is or what the detriment is to making that move right now. And I think maybe a lot of Suns fans and maybe Monty Williams feels the same way.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if I've got an opinion either way. I really don't. And a lot of it is, once again, I don't know if anything can be quite as overblown as that. Because once you start, you get into a flow of minutes and who's starting and who isn't. The minutes you spend with certain groups, though, that's what's influential, getting the chemistry right between all those guys. I don't know. I think it needs more of a sample size before you know anything.
Yeah. But the big story, of course, was the performance of DeAndre Ayton. 11 of 15, 6 offensive rebounds, 17 total, 5 block shots, 26 points. Here was his head coach on that game.
In respect to DA, I think anytime he can have that effect on the defensive end, it just gives us a lot of juice. When he was able to block Oladipo's shot on those drives, I thought it just gave our team a ton of energy to know that we can play aggressive defense and then you got somebody like that behind you that can cover it up. But he also gave us 26 points and was pretty efficient, and then 6 offensive rebounds. You know, getting those extra possessions when you don't shoot well from the three-point line. We were 8 for 34, but
I'm glad to nitpick. There should have been a 35th. They should have been 9 for 35. But DeAndre Ayton's toes got on the line.
He got robbed. Yeah. That
gotta
happened watch, twice, didn't it?
You got to watch those feet, man.
Well, and I saw his shot chart after the game, and it was just about perfect. There was a lot of stuff right around the basket, you know? And that's, I am so stoked that he's done this 2 games in a row. And again, for most of last night's game, I was happy, but I thought it was a little step back from the previous night. And it was just a play here and a play there. Not cutting hard to the basket, not being aware of an alley-oop, just little stupid stuff that I thought, okay, go, get it, DeAndre. Come on, man, come on. And then when he kicked it in and closed the way he did, that far surpassed anything I've ever seen him do. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's the volume in which he's playing now that's lifting everybody up. You see it, dude, every time he dunks. I got news for you. I don't know how many times it's happened, but on SportsCenter's highlight reel, that one-handed alley-oop dunk that he threw down, threw down, it's on the reel. It's on SportsCenter. It's a SportsCenter highlight. So, you know, there was a time when that was a big deal for basketball players. So that's a nice feather in his cap.
Well, 9 dunks now the last 2 games for anybody that's keeping
after
track.
After 7 in the first 11?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's playing different.
Ayton spoke to the media last night, too, and was asked the question, back-to-back big games from you during that week off. What did you do to let that be possible?
I love it. I'm dominating. So, I mean, style of play that comes with physicality, all that is muscle memory, to be honest. It's just us making sure we're on top of our condition. You know, we try to, you know, get into practice here and there and, you know, do our individual things that we can do. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're professionals. You know, this is our job. And the NBA never stopped. It just postponed. So, you know, you just have to be ready any day, you know, and that's just how it is. NBA, that's the new world. We just have to adjust. But this team is solid, and we're going to stay on top of each other to make sure we're good, to make sure we can play games.
Let's see if Monday we take the airwaves, Bic, and we're talking about 4 straight great performances from DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, that would be
that's
good.
That's the next question.
Yeah. I would take 3 out of 4, but keep it going, man. I hope that he really is cognizant, because he's saying the same thing now that he always says.
Yeah.
I just hope he's cognizant about the difference in his play and what it's doing for those around him.
But listen to this one, and I think this is the cut, or DeAndre Ayton shared his thoughts about his own game last night.
To be honest, I think I did what I was supposed to do tonight. It's just that as a whole team, we was all locked in, and we finished off that game in a stretch, just like how we wanted. Although it was back and forth throughout the game, but we really settled down and, you know, locked in at the end and, you know, just closed the game properly like I was supposed to.
The first part of that, to be honest, I did what I was supposed to do tonight.
Okay.
That's when all the you know you've arrived when all the adulation about your great game stops, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And you know what? Example just popped into my head. Remember when Kirk Gibson was the manager of the Diamondbacks and he didn't go to his own son's graduation? And his response was, it's not a big deal. You're supposed to graduate from high school. I mean, that's an extreme example.
No, it's not. It's a great example.
But that's where we want to get as consumers is we don't have to make a big deal when DeAndre Ayton goes off for 26 and 17 because it's commonplace.
Yeah.
And I like to hear him say that because you're right. That first soundbite we played from him sounds like DeAndre Ayton. He's a quote machine. But to hear him, I did what I was supposed to do tonight. Yeah. I like that. The Waste Management Phoenix Open returns February 1st through the 7th, and we're giving you the chance to win the Coors Light Silver Seats to the Open. Text CHILL to 620-620 for your chance to win. That's CHILL to 620-620. Larry Scott on his way out a year early, but will not fulfill the full tenure of his contract. It was supposed to run through June of 2022. That news breaking last night. June 30th will be Larry Scott's last day on the job. So a chance to move into the future and really right a lot of wrongs that have been done by Larry Scott over the last 11 years. And I remember the excitement. I was of the belief early on, Bic.
Yeah.
That coming from the commissionership of Tom Hansen, who was a longtime leader of the conference, but the Pac-10 at that time seemed very antiquated. And Larry Scott did some good things early with expansion, bringing in Colorado and Utah. I mean, there was an attempt to make it the Pac-16 by getting schools like Texas and Oklahoma into the fold, and I don't know how close that came to fruition, but there was excitement. There was even excitement about the creation of the Pac-12 networks. It's been botched ever since, and the coverage plan is still ridiculous, and the fact that that never got rectified under Larry Scott's tenure is maddening, and that's a big to-do for whoever takes over. But that becomes the question now. I've read several different lists of people that could be good candidates. Condoleezza Rice's name has showed up. I don't know how viable that is, but a couple guys that we're very familiar with here in Arizona.
But again, that's exactly the kind of model that they're not looking for.
Yes.
They want somebody deeply rooted in college athletics.
And that's the way it should be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because, I respect the Pac-12 for taking pride in equity of all their programs and all their sports teams, but you have to prioritize football and men's basketball. You just do. That's still the economic and competitive reality of it. Doesn't mean those other programs can't still be great, but you have to prioritize it. So somebody with a deep knowledge of the inner workings of football, that should be number one on the list.
Yes, definitely. There were locally a lot of people, even in recent weeks, who have kind of thrown the name Derek Hall at me. And there was a time when Derek Hall was considered to be a really elite level sports executive, right? Kind of guy that knows how to handle every situation, real experience, real friendly nature, great ties in the media.
Mm-hmm.
That time might have come and gone for Derek Hall. I don't think he's really kind of in that conversation much anymore.
I'd still love to see him commissioner of baseball if they chase Rob Manfred out.
I'll help campaign for it. I'll hammer in signs for him. But to me, this job now, it has to be, I think it's so important that this person who takes this job doesn't need time to learn about the peccadilloes of the Pac-12. You need to have been here and have experienced it, from the officiating to the DirecTV fiasco to all of it, okay? And that, to me, narrows the gap considerably. I threw out Ray Anderson last night. You threw out Greg Byrne. Both would be home run hires for the conference, in my opinion.
What do you think about Gene Smith?
No. I would rather go Ray Anderson. Gene Smith, he's a good name. He's a visible name. He's the AD at Ohio State, so he's got a real big job now.
He's been in this conference.
Yes, I wouldn't say it's a bad hire, but I think somebody like Ray Anderson, who came from the NFL, and all he knows now is Pac-12. So he came to this conference with a big-time background, and now he's got real experience on what they're not doing well. Greg Byrne is perfect because he's... He spent his whole life in college athletics, and now he's at the pinnacle football program in America.
Well, last week we had Greg Byrne on this show after Alabama won the college football playoff championship, and the second to last question that you asked Greg Byrne was, how does the Pac-12 get this right? We didn't know Larry Scott was going to be on his way out. This is a long clip, 2.5 minutes, but I think Greg Byrne covers a lot of very valid and important territory here.
What in the world does the Pac-12 do to get back in this game?
Oh, well, I do have it. That's a good question, Dan. I do have a lot of roots back there. And you know, grew up in the league, and my dad was AD at Oregon in the 80s, and obviously I have ties to both schools in the great state of Arizona. And one of the things I think that any conference needs to do is they need to make sure they keep the focus on the institutions of the conference. The reason why the SEC is the SEC is because places like Alabama and Florida and Georgia and LSU and all these different schools have had a lot of success from a competitive standpoint. Now that the world has changed, where young men and young women can watch our football programs, all of our Olympic sports on the SEC network and have access and say, you know, even though I may come out and play in Alabama, because we have a lot of California kids in our different sports, we recruit California heavily. Or not heavily, but we recruit California, and we're not going to stop doing that because we think what takes place here and the experience that our student athletes can have academically, how they can have athletically, what they can do socially here, what we do here from a mental health standpoint to support all 650 of our kids is very strong. And so when kids see that, they see that support in all the aspects of what allows them to develop to be the best they can. They say, yeah, okay, I'll take a look at coming to Alabama. We got a kid on our basketball team named Jordan Shackelford. He's a Southern California kid and was, I think, first team all SEC last year, first team all freshman team on the SEC. And so to me, if you, whatever conference you're in, you're going to need to make sure you do everything you can to get resources to the institutions to allow them to invest in the experience of the kids, to allow you to have the best opportunity to hire the best coaches that are out there, because, you know, just like if you're on faculty, students are going to want to go to wherever the best faculty are. Athletes are going to want to go and be coached by the very best coaches, and it takes resources to do that. Mm-hmm. And so the Pac-12 is a wonderful conference. There's great passion from the schools, but they need to do everything they can to make sure that the dollars are getting to the institutions.
Yeah, I mean, he reiterated that three times during that answer.
Three times.
But what? And it's so obvious. It's as plain as the nose on your face, but it wasn't obvious to the current leadership. Which is just maddening.
Oh, listen, you know this better than I do. The Pac-12 in some pockets is so lost in time and so outdated in what they think is going on in the rest of the world. They laugh in other conferences how devoted the Pac-12 is to a parade, how important a parade is. And parades are great, don't get me wrong.
Okay, I love a parade.
I love a parade. They're okay. It depends. Okay. If you get enough people throwing candies from convertibles, then they can be pretty cool.
Jared, there's a social studies question. What do you feel about parades?
I love a parade.
They're okay.
That's right. They're okay. Yeah. So there's just some arrogance in this conference, and it's the conference of champions. And it's
just not basketball or football.
Yeah. And that's, it's like, okay, well.
Men's basketball.
Congratulations on being the tallest building in Iowa. Excellent.
The Pac-12 as a women's basketball conference? Juggernaut.
Yeah, it is. It is. And there's a time and a place for that, and much props for that. In the perfect world of college athletics, there should be something of a meritocracy like that, and there should be something of a, okay, you know what, we're here to work for everybody. Mm-hmm. We're here to work for female basketball players and swimmers and golfers, football players, basketball players. But we all know that what we want our colleges to be good at are football and basketball.
Because
in that order.
That butters the bread.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think
it gets people talking?
Maybe we can circle back around to this, but do you think Some people have suggested Greg Byrne is in a really good spot at Alabama right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the
premier. Why would he want to leave?
Why would he want to leave
yeah.
to a job that requires so much heavy lifting?
Uh-huh.
I mean, the roots are here, definitely. And I like the fact that he's had a few years now in the SEC experience. And maybe you can apply some of those things, some of that learning to what needs to happen in the Pac-12. I think he's an intriguing candidate. I think Ray Anderson's an intriguing candidate. They're going to have a lot of good candidates to choose from. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of over the moon on this whole news, as you,
well,
if you couldn't tell.
Well, it's much needed, and the fear was that they weren't going to do it, that they were going to maybe wait a year and do it. I'm glad they, because really the time is of the essence right now. It's mm-hmm. the perception of the Pac-12. It's rarely, if ever, been worse. They need to change this right now.
Yes, they do. Coming up next, Thursday, we got Mock My World straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com reads, will the Arizona Coyotes make the NHL playoffs in 2021? Your choices, yes, no, too early to say.
My vote is no.
Am I having deja vu again?
Yeah, I remember it was, yeah, there was something very much like that question.
No is leading right now, 55%. Too early to say, 34%, 11% right now. After four games? They've played four games, right? 11% say yes, they're going to make the playoffs. That's today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You can vote on it right now. It's on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Murata. Mock My World.
Stop mocking me!
Brought to you by V's Barbershop.
It is Mock My World time. On Thursdays we do it. And looking back at the results of last week, best beards in honor of the James Harden trade. One Dan Bickley.
Oh!
Dominated the field.
Is that right?
With 35.8% of the vote, his team of Abe Lincoln, James Harden, Archie Bradley, and Michael McDonald. That's what I love about Mock My World, bringing unlikely characters
right.
together.
You
got almost 36% of the vote. Jarrett edged me out for second place. He had 22.9%. I had 22.3%. Sarah bringing up the rear, 18.9% over 800 votes cast. This week, we're getting vice presidential.
We are.
This is interesting.
It is.
Because just looking at a list of vice presidents, it is astounding how many people I had never, ever heard of.
Yeah, I know. So it's people who share last or first names?
Celebrities.
Celebrities.
Slash athletes.
Right.
Who share a name with a U.S.
vice president.
So,
yes.
It has to be the vice president's last name.
But it could be first or last for our selection.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes.
It can't just be like you pick a guy named George or John.
We're going in reverse order, correct, of last week's results?
Yes.
So Sarah will have the first pick. I will go second. Jarrett third. Dan fourth. Four rounds, snake-style draft. Go ahead and start us off, Sarah.
Okay.
And please don't take my pick.
I probably will.
Also, one more caveat.
Oh, boy.
Does the spelling have to be exactly the same?
I think it should be.
Okay.
Well,
no?
I don't know, Jarrett.
All right, go.
Are you asking about Hendrix, perchance? Because I had that same thought. Yes.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix doesn't count, I don't
know. Oh, I
okay,
see.
Okay.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I see where you're going.
All okay. right. I am very thrilled to have the first pick.
Yeah,
because
I know
this
who you're
week
gonna pick.
Because I am going to take Charles Barkley.
Gosh darn it!
Albin W. Barkley was a vice president,
nice.
1949 to 1953.
Sarah the Ruthless.
Let's go.
I quit.
Albin W. Barkley.
Speaking of,
well, finish
VPs
in last place this
about.
Time, and you won't have any worries next week.
I'm going with Candy Maldonado.
Yeah,
I haven't pulled that
that's
one out
right,
in a while.
That's good.
Now what am I going to do? This was really hard, and my brain does not work this way. But Lyndon B. Johnson was a vice president, so I will go with Magic Johnson.
Oh, okay.
narrowly my pick over
Never
David Johnson.
Heard of him, Gracie.
Can I ask another question on we can't go to the same vice president more than once, can we?
No. Sure. You can't just pick all Johnsons. Okay. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, Jarrett, you're up.
Oh, boy. There doesn't seem to be an obvious one here, but I'm going to go with Frank Gore.
Frank Gore, of course. Al Gore, vice president under Bill Clinton.
Yeah, look at that, huh?
Yeah.
Look at that.
This is really hard.
Okay, I am going to go with Harrison Ford.
Ah, that was the one I had next. Good pick.
And that one, too.
Thank you.
For Gerald Ford, of course.
For Gerald Ford. And I'm going to go with Steven Tyler.
Oh.
In honor of
Vice President Tyler.
John Tyler,
John
I believe.
Tyler.
Yeah.
Back to you, Jarrett.
All right, I am going to go with Russell Wilson, named after 1873 Henry Wilson, Ulysses S. Grant's vice president.
All right, good pick. I got to say, this is the hardest mock we've ever done. I'm going personal taste now. I'm piggybacking on the Al Gore selection. I'm going with the chief songwriter and driving force behind Depeche Mode, Martin Gore.
There you go.
Cool. All right.
Sarah, you got two picks.
Cool. With my second pick, I will go with Sophia Bush. George H.W. Bush was a VP.
Yes.
And then I will take Arthur Ashe after Chester A. Arthur, who was very briefly a VP.
What you did there.
That was well done.
All right. It's coming to me now. Now
you're in the zone now.
Now playing chess.
Here we go.
Speaking of your brief vice presidents, from March 4th, 1853 to April 18th, 1853, William R. King was the vice president. So for like a month.
What happened to our dude, William R. King?
I'm going with Martin Luther King.
Oh, wow. That was a good one.
Oh boy, my Frank Gore pick is none.
Yeah, and if Bick, you want to get mad, somebody tweeted that one. So,
tweeted what?
Frank Gore.
Oh yeah, no, that's okay. I wasn't getting mad because you weren't scrolling Twitter the way Jarrett was looking for clues.
I'm not looking at Twitter. I'm looking at the list of vice presidents.
All you do is look at Twitter.
Do we know what happened to William R. King? What happened?
I don't know.
He died.
I would assume
six
he died.
Weeks
he
in.
Died. Yeah. Oh, well, being elected in 1841, I suppose it's not that unusual.
No.
1853.
All right. Okay, who's?
Whatever.
And then the office remained vacant for 4 years after he died.
Okay.
Left a hole behind.
He did.
All right. Who's turn?
Jarrett, your pick.
Okay. I'm going with the current vice president, and I'm going with Neil Patrick Harris.
Good. That was good. Why are you laughing? I had that one down, too.
It's a good pick.
It is a good pick.
It's very difficult, like I said. Go ahead, Bick. You got two picks
okay,
to complete your team.
To clarify now, because we've had two Gores go off the board.
Yes.
So a second Bush can go off
yes,
the board.
Yes. Yeah.
As long as it's not
team.
Repeat on your team.
Two Bushes.
Oh,
yeah.
I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So you can't go Ford or Tyler here.
I got
so you. So your pick of Bonnie Tyler is out the window.
Reggie Bush.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay. And just because it's so out of left field, well, who do I want to go with my last one? I'm gonna go with Denny Hamlin, NASCAR racer.
Hey Hamlin, nice PJ.
Uh-huh.
Named after former Vice President Harry Hamlin.
I'm banking on some recency bias on that one. No, if you want to know which Hamlin it was, do you?
I don't know.
Sure.
Bob the Hammer Hamlin?
Oh, let me find him.
Hannibal right. Hamlin?
Oh, Hannibal
Dude,
Hamlin. That's
was
right.
Hannibal
Hamlin.
What a great name, huh?
That's such a good name.
It was a different era back then.
He had alliterative parents, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Ooh, Jarrett.
All right, with my last pick, in honor of... This guy looks like, I guess he spanned Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. In honor of George Clinton... I'm going to pick George Clinton. P-Funk.
That's funny.
George P-Funk Clinton.
It's weird that you went with that Clinton and not Bill Clinton.
I guess I could have.
You could have. I'm just throwing my hands up on this one. I'm trying to cash in on the whole Hamilton craze. So in honor of Aaron Burr, I'm going with Old Ironsides. Raymond Burr.
Yes.
Sir.
Lars Thorwald from Rear Window.
Okay.
I have the weirdest team ever.
You really, really do.
Sarah, last
pick. I really wanted... Oh, Sarah, do you have one last pick, Sarah?
Yes, yeah. I have one last pick. And I am going to take Marshall Mathers with Thomas R. Marshall.
Oh, that's good.
See, she was good. She's using the first as last name ones that we...
We're not that adept at this game.
I almost was going to pick Lon Chaney or Lon Chaney Jr.
Or Calbert Chaney.
But that might even be old for even me.
Who is the coach at Temple, the basketball?
John Chaney.
John Chaney.
Remember he wanted to kill John Calipari?
I'll never forget that.
Ed Harris.
And remember he had that really weird out from left field press conference here after playing ASU? Do you remember that many years ago?
All right,
I'm surprised no one took Hunter Pence.
I was trying to think of a...
I couldn't think of a Pence either.
I was thinking of Sixpence None the Richer.
That's what I thought of, too.
I didn't know if that was legal.
Sarah's team of Charles Barkley, Sophia Bush, Arthur Ashe, and Marshall Mathers.
Pretty
I've got
good.
Magic Johnson, Martin Gore, Martin Luther King, and Raymond Burr. Jared's got Frank Gore, Russell Wilson, Neil Patrick Harris, and George Clinton. And Bick's got Harrison Ford, Steven Tyler, Reggie Bush, and Denny Hamlin as we constructed weird, weird teams
based on
the names of vice presidents.
If people looked at our teams without any context, they'd never figure out what the...
They wouldn't, you're right.
Yeah. We should have done the draft.
We couldn't find
without announcing what the...
All right, it made people figure it out.
We couldn't find any famous Agnews or...
Yeah. Vincent Agnew.
What else?
Former NBA guard of the Seattle Supersonics.
Bidens or Quails.
Yeah.
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 All right, we'll get this up on Twitter. At Bickley_Murata, you determine the winner. As always, here on Mock My World. Coming up next, we'll get the latest with the Kansas City Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes will check in with Kansas City Chiefs reporter Adam Teicher next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
A few days away from Championship Sunday in the NFL, got the Chiefs and the Bills from Arrowhead in the AFC. And here to give us the latest on the Kansas City side of things, he covers the Chiefs for ESPN.com. Adam Teicher, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Adam, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it today.
Julie, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, thanks. How's Patrick Mahomes doing today? I'm sure you've been asked that question a million times in the last few days.
Yeah, the over-under would probably be in the thousands by now since he got hurt. But yeah, he's out of practice again today. They just started a little while ago, so we'll know more a little later when it's over. But he is practicing at least, and you know, I think this thing has gone too far down the road for him not to play. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I would expect that he'll be taken out of the concussion protocol at some point, and he'll play on Sunday.
All right, Adam, I'm curious from a Kansas City perspective, how did the events of the win over the Browns play out? It was such a magical moment for a career backup in Chad Henne. It was sort of a testament to Andy Reid's cojones and his belief in his team. Everything that happened at the end of that game, how has it been celebrated? What does it mean to this football team and its culture?
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary. I mean, the Chiefs have finished games in a similar manner during the regular season. There's been three or four where they've needed their offense to convert and keep the ball away from the opponents and win the game, and similar to what happened against the Browns. You know, one-score games where the Chiefs needed to keep the ball away. You know, the difference was they've always had Pat Mahomes at quarterback until Sunday. So, you know, to get it done, to do what he did, hey, that was probably the easiest or one of the easiest passes of Chad Henne's career. You know, hey, I think a lot of non-NFL quarterbacks could have, a lot of people who don't play football could have made that throw. But still, it takes some guts to try to do that in the fourth quarter with a minute and something left, because if you turn the ball over, the Browns have 48 yards to go. to beat you.
Yeah.
With more than a minute left. So yeah, that did take some guts on his part in a win or go home situation to do that. It's one thing to do it in the regular season. It's another to do it when it might be cost of your season. But that's kind of the stuff that he's done. Again, with Mahomes at quarterback, now to do it with Chad Henne is a totally different deal.
Yeah, Adam Teicher, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I agree with you. Was gutsy to call that, especially with the backup quarterback. But we were talking about it earlier in the week, Adam, about the play on which Patrick Mahomes left the game. The play call there, and I know like the Chiefs like to do that sprint option. They had scored a touchdown basically earlier in the game. But Patrick Mahomes was clearly not 100% dealing with whatever foot injury he had. How much grief did Andy Reid get in Kansas City for that particular play call, if any?
Well, he got some. I mean, sure. He's open to be second-guessed on that stuff because I'll tell you what, last year, you remember the play he got hurt on last year when he hurt his knee, knocked him out for a couple games. That was a quarterback sneak. And the Chiefs to this day have not run a quarterback sneak again. They have just said, no, we're not doing that. And now, they're running the option with him. And, Reed was asked about that. And he said basically the difference was between that and the quarterback sneak is that there's not a bunch of 300-pound guys standing around. It's more of an open space. Well, yeah, that's true, but you also have linebackers, coming at you at a pretty good rate of speed right there in the open field. So I'd be surprised if this play sort of persuaded him not to run those kinds of plays again with Pat Mahomes, but we'll see. But hey, the track record is there with the quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
All right. When you take a look at this matchup, how do you think this kind of fits for Kansas City? There's been a narrative this year. I know you're aware of this. I don't know whether it's true or not, that either the Chiefs have played down to their competition or maybe the thrill of it all is not the same, that maybe they're vulnerable, if you will. I'm not, or ready just to hit the switch when it really matters, if you will. Tell us about this matchup, how it works for Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't believe personally in any of that stuff. I think they've put forth a good effort. I think they've had their attention on their opponents at hand. I think teams are doing a better job. And one thing I do think was a factor, at least late in the regular season, was I think they were kind of wearing down from the burden of taking everybody's best shot every week. And I think that was certainly an issue for them. That's why I thought it was important they get that bye more from a mental and emotional standpoint than a physical standpoint. So, and then they got off to a good start and then couldn't finish the Browns off the other day. So we'll see how it happens here. But, this is just a different Chiefs team than it's been. I mean, they're not as high powered. They don't finish drives like they used to. And they're kicking more field goals than they'd like to kick. I mean, it's just a different team this year. And, teams are doing a little better job on them defensively. I know the Chiefs played the Bills in October in Buffalo, and the Chiefs won by 9 points. But, the Bills were just determined not to let the Chiefs beat them deep. The Chiefs had a pass of longer than 20 yards in the game. The Bills played they're two safeties deep on every snap, and the Chiefs ran for almost 250 yards. And the Chiefs sort of made their way that way.
Yeah.
I'm expecting something completely different from the Bills on Sunday. But at what cost? Do you let Tyreek Hill beat you? I think he caught three passes for 20 yards in that game. To tell you what an unusual game that was. So I'm wondering what Buffalo decides to take away this time and what the cost might be.
Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. A lot of talk about the offense, and with good reason. Patrick Mahomes is one of the glamour players in the league, one of the productive players of the league. But defensively, a guy that we're very familiar with here, Tyrann Mathieu, has been so instrumental to Kansas City the last 2 years. If you had to like rank the importance of the players on the Chiefs roster, Mahomes would be number one. Is there an argument to be made that Tyrann Mathieu could be number two on that list?
He'd certainly be up there. Travis Kelce might be my number two, mm-hmm. but he'd have to be at least three or four. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu's been a real worth every penny kind of guy for the Chiefs. He's. I've seen the Chiefs sign some high-profile free agents, big-money free agents in my time, and they always take a little bit of time to sort of assimilate themselves in the locker room. They're sort of more standing on the sidelines and letting everybody else take the lead until they maybe feel a little more comfortable with their surroundings and with their new teammates. And Tyrann Mathieu was the exact opposite. He came in and from day one said, from day one became the guy that everybody in that locker room listens to, particularly on the defensive side. I mean, he's a clear leader on defense, and he's been as well as he's playing on the field. He's been as valuable to the Chiefs for what else he brings to them. And I think I was kind of caught a little bit unaware by that. The Chiefs have never played against him. I think they played against Arizona once when he was there. And he was hurt, so he didn't play. So I was kind of aware of what kind of player he was, but I wasn't aware of what kind of guy he was. Maybe he's kind of grown into this role later in his career. Maybe he wasn't quite this way in Arizona, but he certainly has been. The Chiefs have gotten their money's worth at $13 million and then some with him, because I don't think they win the Super Bowl without him last year, and I don't think they're where they are this year without him as well.
Okay, this era of football obviously is going to add to Andy Reid's legacy, championship, maybe more to come in the future. For a guy who's been doing it at a high level for a very, very long time, what's he like? What's he like to cover? How do you describe who he is in the pantheon of coaches?
You always get asked, when's Andy Reid going to retire? I mean, this is the team he's been waiting for, He's not going anywhere anytime soon. I mean, he's been waiting to coach a team like this. I mean, not only do they win, but they play the game the way he wants to play it, a higher paced, higher scoring type of game. So he's not going anywhere. I did a story a few weeks ago about why guys like to play for Andy Reid. He's just this grandfatherly 62-year-old guy who doesn't have a lot in common with the modern player, but guys line up to play for him. And it's not just because the Chiefs are writing big checks or because you have the chance to play for a championship and you have maybe a chance to play with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, there's a big Andy Reid factor here too, that guys want to play for him and they like playing for him, and just the things about why are just incredible. He's just a real guy with them, and he's had players lining up to talk to me about how much they like playing for Andy Reid. And I'm not talking about current players necessarily. I'm talking about players who have gone different ways now, or either out of football or with other teams, but they have no reason to speak highly of Andy Reid, but just that they really think highly of the guy.
Yeah.
So he's just a guy guys love to play for. I mean, he's, with his talk about food and how much he loves food. And I've had players tell me, they go to him for restaurant recommendations and he said, was undefeated in that area and that kind of thing. So, one player told me there's a local delicacy at the barbecue places in town called Burnt Ends. And he was given advice on what time of day to go to the various barbecue places in town to get that particular restaurant's best burnt ends. I mean, it's just amazing, that kind of stuff.
But it
resonates with players, particularly the big guys. The guys who really like to play for him are the linemen who, you'd think it would be Mahomes or the receivers or whatever, but it's the big guys who really like it. So it's just, it's kind of an amazing phenomenon. It really is. And, a world where you wouldn't think maybe two things don't go together. Guys love to play for Andy Reid, and it goes well beyond the reasons you might think.
That's awesome. Adam, thanks so much for the time. Great to talk to you. We really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, guys.
All right, thanks. Adam Seitzer covers the Chiefs for ESPN.com. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. The Blast coming up next, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.